Palma versus Ashcroft, 03-23-71. Mr. Schiller.
This is to bring some relief.
Yes.
But it hasn't been any stretch.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is William Schiller, and I represent the petitioner appellant in this case, Benjamin Ortiz Palma. Your Honors, we stand on the briefs, the arguments made in our briefs on appeal, and I'd like to make a following point as to why the harm that Mr. Ortiz suffered rose to the level of persecution. Your Honor, this is kind of a unique case because we're dealing with threats and psychological harm. The respondent in this case and the judge maintained that such threat or psychological harm cannot rise to the level of persecution. In fact, the respondent argues that this argument about threats and psychological harm is wholly without merit, and that's contained in their brief. We would argue otherwise and emphasize the facts in this case and what Mr. Ortiz himself has suffered and what's in the record. He's credible. The immigration judge has commented on the severity of what he suffered, but she didn't find persecution because threats did not rise to the level of persecution. Proof of the harm that Mr. Ortiz suffered is the physical ailments that were established in the record, as well as the mental and psychological proof of what he suffered, which was brought forth by the testimony of Dr. Ducheney from the Colgo Center. Your Honor, I'm just going to touch on the level of psychological harm suffered by Mr. Ortiz. This is harm that is debilitating, is long-lasting, and as serious as any serious physical harm, as serious as any beating. It lasts to the present date, and he can't really function according to the testimony, which was not challenged. The testimony of the Kobler Center, this is the Kobler Center for Victims of Torture, stated that he was receiving ongoing therapy. And according to Ms. Ducheney, and this is very relevant, she testified that Mr. Ortiz suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, and I know the courts are very cynical about this, but she talks about the level of harm here. She calls him an extremely sensitive individual, and this is important as well, as I'll get to later, and that the intensity and type of the symptomology, when interpreted within his culture, were very severe. She also commented that he had problems suffering to the present date. Your Honor, the court in this case, in reaching its decision, stated that because this person wasn't physically harmed, that he shouldn't get asylum, and we disagree with this. We also disagree with the respondent in this case, who is taken on the same line of argument. In their brief, the respondent stated that our arguments are wholly without merit and asked for some authority. Now, we never claimed that our applicant, Mr. Ortiz, was physically harmed. We never made that argument. But what we maintain is that he suffered devastating psychological harm. If you look at this case within the context of what was going on in Guatemala, it shouldn't be pushed aside, which is what the immigration judge and the U.S., the respondent, is trying to do at this point. Within the context, and this is heavily documented, you have individuals who were issued threats. They were followed by cars. Then they were kidnapped or disappeared or killed. This is what happened to Mr. Ortiz. Now, Mr. Ortiz, excuse me, was admittedly a very sensitive individual. But the point is, I guess we talked about the eggshell victim here. He was harmed. It was severe. And that was the victim in this case. The threat, the imminent threat of harm, the cars following him, and what was going on around the time in the 1990s showed that others, individuals similarly situated, were being harmed and killed at the same time. Mr. Ortiz witnessed during the 70s and 80s people being hung up by trees, labor members, leaders of the sort, and this is exactly what was going on at the time by the security forces to instill this type of terror. It was the whole idea to try to get people who were active in labor activities to stop, to cease, and desist. Mr. Ortiz, it worked on him. Well, he continued his activities, whatever they were, but it did have this devastating psychological effect. As far as the law supporting the case, we would point to Belisovsky. which states, in essence, and that's a Seventh Circuit case, that mere harassment is not enough. We're not saying that this is harassment here, Your Honors. This is a very serious case. A lot of people at the Culver Center have worked with this individual. Within the context of the situation, the context is very important under Belisowski. People around Mr. Ortiz were being threatened. They were being followed. They were being disappeared and killed. Was he killed? No. But I don't think being killed or being
was
physically...
Was he threatened?
I'm sorry, Your
Honor? Was he threatened? Or
yes, he was threatened, Your Honor.
Injured?
He was not injured, Your Honor.
Is this a type of paranoia, too?
Paranoia?
Oh.
No, if you look at the statement of Mr. Staney,
he sees other people being followed, and he's being followed.
Your Honor, the statement of the doctor said that there was no mental illness involved. What happened was he was affected by this. It manifested itself physically. He was never physically harmed, but the other people were. I don't think the law requires that he ever is physically harmed, but that he has a well-founded fear of persecution. In this case, Your Honor, the harm which manifested itself was the psychological harm. I know it's an argument that's probably not made this often, and we don't take it lightly either, but it's manifested itself through stomach ailments, heart ailments. This person cannot exist or function. This goes beyond harassment, looking within the context, which is what Belisowski talks about, within the context of the situation which the court saw. This is beyond harassment. It's not the matter of somebody following him down the street, a bunch of kids. There are people, this is documented by Amnesty International, which wrote an urgent action letter at the time, talking about the killing of similarly situated individuals. It is not mere harassment. They just didn't act at the time, and if he did stick around, perhaps they would have, but we don't know that. Looking at mere threat, under Boykov, this court has said that threats sometimes themselves, in a small category of cases, the threats can constitute persecution. And they talk about, while they're uniformly unpleasant, there needs to be actual suffering or harm. In this case, it was very menacing. There was actual suffering and harm. They got this victim, Mr. Ortiz. Was he sensitive? I don't think he was delusional. He was scared, and it affected him this way. Thin shell, maybe, and he cracked. He was persecuted, Your Honor. As far as the argument, the respondent says that there's nothing no authority anywhere saying that physical suffering, that mental suffering will work. Well, Your Honor, pointing to you to the, in the 10-hour brief, to Fisher versus INS, and I know it's the Ninth Circuit, they talk about Congress's deletion of the physical persecution requirement to persecution, and that persecution can include psychological. In our reply brief, we also, and I think this is very eye-opening as well, we were able to get a copy of the U.S. INS at the time, their training manual for asylum officers, which itself, and we attach it to our reply brief, states under psychological harm, it says psychological harm on page 24, harm need not be physical to constitute persecution. It talks about psychological harm. So we're not coming, this isn't wholly without merit, and there was a lot of thought that goes into these training manuals, and they do cite to the law. Should it be given persuasive weight? I'm not saying it, but it should be guiding, especially in this issue, which this court hasn't addressed at this point. Your Honor, as far as the eggshell, the sensitive individual, in this training manual, they refer directly to the UNHCR in its handbook, and that could also be persuasive at all, which talks about you have to look at the individual circumstances, or I would suggest that an adjudicator should, of the circumstances of the individual, and they give an example of one who might be older, who's made to stand out in the hot sun for a period of hours. That person's going to be harmed by, well, somebody who's younger may not. Your Honor, Mr. Ortiz is a victim here who was older, he was beaten down, and what they intended to do, they did. And he was persecuted. He has suffered past persecution. We make an argument about the torture convention. The judge says we failed there because we haven't proven extreme torture. Now, there's nothing in the statute about extreme torture, so we don't know what the judge is talking about here or what type of analysis that she had. I'll stop there, Your Honor. Thank you.
Stephen.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Elizabeth Stevens, and I represent the government of the United States. This is an asylum case of an individual from Guatemala who worked in the union or was affiliated with the union partially for a period of over 20 years. During that 20 years, he did witness some things when another union representative.
What was his role there? The brief says he formed the union, but you think he was.
He was not
in the union. And he didn't testify.
According to the record evidence, he was not a leader of the union or anything else. He was a he was a worker at the plant where the union was formed, and he joined the union at its very at what appears to be the forming, the formation of the union. However, his work within the union, he was responsible for maybe organizing soccer games, those type of things. It was worker activity as far as recreational activity that he was.
Chairman of the entertainment committee.
Yes.
That's pretty good job.
And he lost his job at the plant in around about 1982 and went out and worked in other areas. Admittedly, he had some difficulties finding a job, but he did all right in his own words. He owned at least two houses, and there's indication in the record that there was a third residence of his wife that was also there. So even though he might have had some difficulties in finding a job, there was no persecution as far as his membership at that time. The incidents that we're looking at here stem from about a one-month period in February of 1990 when he went back to work at the plant and the union went on strike, occupied the plant, and were forced out of the plant when everything closed. During this one-month period, he received three anonymous letters, and he was followed on occasion, according to his testimony, by a car with tinted windows. There were no threats coming from the car. There was no connection with the car and the letters. There was no actual connection here. He then stayed in Guatemala for five more months. He reported no incidents after February of 1990 that would indicate a threat. Therefore, during his time in Guatemala, there's no evidence that this continued past February of 1990. Plus, during his testimony, he shows no indication of during his time in Guatemala that he was debilitated in any way by his fears. This only happens after he comes to the United States. It's the government's position that the incidents in Guatemala do not amount to past persecution. Threats without more cannot amount to persecution. The government's position is that his subjective fear of future persecution is what's at issue in his psychological and other problems that he evidenced during his testimony and through the expert testimony during the court. The immigration judge specifically said he has definitely established that he had a subjective fear of future persecution. That is where this evidence of his psychological harm, if you want to call it that, goes in. The harm is because of his fear of future persecution, his subjective fear. On the record, he has not established an objective fear of future persecution given the issues at the situation in Guatemala today. There's no evidence that he is seen currently in Guatemala as a member of union. He hasn't been in Guatemala for over 10 years. He hasn't paid his dues. There's no evidence of union membership after 1976.
As I can tell, he hasn't been in Guatemala for almost 14 years.
That's correct, sir. He left in August of 1990.
So, anything else?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Is there anything else?
There is also no evidence that there is any practice of persecution of generic union members in Guatemala. There is substantial evidence in the record that any persecution of union people is limited to trade union activists and union leaders, and it's the government's position that he does not fit within that group, and therefore there is no well-founded fear of future persecution. for the same reason the government would submit that there is no form, that he did not establish any objective fear of torture sufficient under the record. The immigration judge's statement of severe torture comes from eliding the definition of torture in the regulations, where it says torture is a severe form of treatment. The immigration judge did set out the whole aspect for Convention Against Torture claims. It is not just what has happened in the past, but it also looks at possible relocation within the country. It looks at evidence of human rights abuses in the country and evidence that that person would be subjected, would be singled out for torture. There's no evidence on this record, and the immigration judge and the board were correct in finding that he did not establish eligibility for protection under the Convention Against Torture. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much.
You've got about 30 seconds. Oh, time's up.
Probably have used it up. Your Honor, we would rest on the briefs. As far as evidence, well-founded fear, she didn't even look at, the judge didn't even look at similarly situated individuals. The evidence does clearly show of union members being harmed as far as current country conditions, so we believe that that's inaccurate in terms of the respondent's brief. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Take the case under advisement, the fourth case.